SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And we are back with another episode of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing?
I'm doing phenomenal.
I cannot tell you how much effort it took in my head to say the exact order of how I always say it today. I've messed it up twice in like
that. That's the kind
episodes.
Of week it is.
it's incredible. Yeah, it's a crazy week. It's a crazy week for the Americans. Also a crazy week for college football as a whole. And I know we both do like stuff that isn't just AAC that we talk about, write about all that stuff, you know. For my Notre Dame stuff, it's USC week. That's a huge deal. And I've like ignored it. It's Tuesday and I should stop ignoring it because I need to do a lot of stuff for that.
At USC or at Notre Dame?
Notre Dame. It's always, if it's in the October, it's always played at Notre Dame. Okay. And when it's at USC, it's always the last week of the regular season.
Right. Because we actually have good weather in California. So
that's
they can
like
play
100%
out here.
What it is. And they do the vice versa with Stanford. So Stanford's the final game this year and it's at Stanford. If next year,
I might go to that, honestly, because it's been a while since I've been to a good Notre Dame, like
Notre Dame Stanford should be a good game this year. Yeah. I think they're pretty comparable. Look at us already off topic.
Oh my God. It's not off. We're well-rounded college football analysts. Yeah. So we could talk about anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, LSU just fired Orgeron, which like a $17 million buyout. So I feel bad for the guy. I really do. No, I don't. But, you know, Luke Fickell's got another job opportunity.
They beat Florida. So, like,
I think they were negotiating him getting fired because they had that whole, like, written agreement. I think they were probably negotiating all week. I think he probably knew it was coming before the Florida game.
But he still beat Florida. Like, would you just go in and tank that game if you knew we were getting fired?
No, I think I would win every game for the rest of the year to prove a point.
But if he wasn't going to make it the rest of the year, if he knew he was going to be out, just to be
just
petty.
Really, you know, that's true.
That's a level of petty I aspire to.
But that game was great because it was this way for a lot of UCF fans who are having a bad Saturday to say, Florida's just this, you know, at least we were supposed to lose Florida. I don't know. You know,
yeah.
We might got blown out, but what's going on over there?
Yeah, not great.
It's a smoke screen in the state of Florida that completely hide well, literally every team in the state of Florida is bad this year.
Yeah, it's not been fun.
That's terrible.
Florida State has been just
they're terrible. Miami, did you see the handshake?
Was supposed to be good, but they're...
I thought they were going to... King's been hurt. They also just like clearly didn't develop on what they had built a little bit last year.
Right.
Diverging into it, the CUSA teams, FAU and FIU have been disappointing. Willie Taggart's offense at FAU is shockingly bad. I think is the polite way to put it.
You were way nicer about them in your article, in your AAC expansion article. I was like, you were very nice about FAU.
Well, I think FAU's got some really good things going for them that makes sense. Okay. But I think right now, Willie Taggart's offense, they're good on defense. Mm-hmm. That's worth anything. But no, they've been losing games they should win.
In a world that doesn't care about defense, being good on defense is no one cares.
Yeah. And you mentioned my AAC expansion article that came out earlier. We're recording on Tuesday. We're a little bit late to record this week through various, you know, who cares about it? We're just late.
It is what it is.
Exactly. But my article came out this morning, so you're probably going to hear this 24 hours after the article went up. Basically, on Monday night, it was announced that, well, not announced, reports came out that there are six Conference USA schools that are going to apply for membership to the American in at least football and basketball. I'm assuming most sports, the Olympic sports get a little tricky because not every school has one, blah, blah, blah. That's way too into the details of what, we're talking about here.
Right.
But all six are also expected to be accepted like sometime this week, which is again
expected. You're gonna make me start drinking again.
Hey, I'm using the language of the report. It's not my report. It was Pete Thamel from Yahoo Sports first reported. I saw the Athletic confirm the report. Basically, it's out there. You've probably seen it too if you listen to the show.
Right.
Yeah, and FAU is one of those schools. Largely to replace UCF, who's leaving for the Big 12, FAU's getting in. You know, they've got a nice little stadium. They've been putting money into their facilities. They've been good in recent years, though they're not as good as they could be this year. You know, big name coach in Willie Taggart, big name coach before him in Lane Kiffin. Say what you will about Lane Kiffin, the person, big name, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they open off recruiting to the Fort Lauderdale, South Florida area, which is important. So yes, those are the reasons I gave for FAU's probably makes sense.
I thought you did a good job. If you guys haven't read the article, you should definitely go to Underdog Dynasty and read it, because not only does Dan break down the teams that are coming in and the potential they bring and why they are a good fit, but he also talks about the situations for the teams that are left and what this means for the conference and what could potentially happen. So I thought it was great.
Well, thank you for that. And yeah, I think, so just before I forget to mention the six teams, in case you haven't heard, it's FAU, Charlotte, UAB, Rice, North Texas, and UTSA.
You had a different tone when you said Rice.
Rice. I don't like that Rice. And Rice and North Texas don't make sense to me, to be honest.
But your reasoning as to having a foothold in Houston,
that's in gotta Rice, be,
that makes sense.
It's the only reason that I can think of as to why you would still include, because Rice isn't, they are historically bad at football, and the AAC still sees itself as the Power Six football conference, though that Power Six mantra should probably die now if we're getting it.
Rice has a lot of potential. I think Mike Bloomer is a great coach. He's just really hard
for you, isn't he?
Yes, I love Bloom. He gave me the best. He texted me the night before the App State game when I was there. Mm-hmm. And he had coached out that way prior to Stanford. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a really good breakfast recommendation. So shout out Bloom.
Hey, if it's a good breakfast recommendation, I actually have no issue with him. Or it's just,
I know.
I'm talking
just
about the
program.
The program, the general apathy towards the program from the community.
That it's a lot like Stanford, honestly. Like, that's how Stanford is with their program. Like,
you know. But it is in the city of Houston, and you're losing a team in the city of Houston, which is one of the most important, if not the most important, recruiting markets and media markets in the country for college football. So it's important to stay there, I guess. I didn't really understand North Texas other than trying to get to, like, I mean, they've invested in the program, and this is something I should say. All six teams that got, you know, or that are, you know, quote unquote, projected to be in the American.
Expected,
blah, blah, blah. They're all teams that are willing to invest in their football program. They invest in facilities. UAB's got a really, I think, beautiful brand new stadium that they just opened up this year. You know, they're all putting the money and effort in, and that's important. That's why I think why North Texas got in. Plus, there's talk that because the AAC moved its headquarters to Dallas, they're really trying to make sure that they have a foothold in Texas still and block the Mountain West from poaching any teams. In particular, I think they're concerned that SMU might say there's a better option out there for us and leave.
Memphis, I, like you said in your article, I think Memphis is one of those teams too, because they desperately want to go, but to
Memphis
where?
Wants,
so then
Memphis
they would
wants
be
the Big 12.
Like, yeah, they do. And they would be primed for the next round, like you said, if you bring in all these teams. Because I thought your point was interesting about the diluted shares and talking about, you know, how adding all these teams is actually like addition or subtraction by addition, weirdly.
And what I've been looking at now is that it looks like the new teams are probably going to get a fractional share of the conference revenue to try to make up for that difference, which it'll still be better than what Conference USA pays them, but it's not going to be nearly what the other AAC teams will be getting, is what that generally.
I heard that number for the Conference USA
it's
deal.
Under a
million. I was on Memphis radio this morning. I had not heard the actual number, and they said it, and I almost like fell out of my chair. I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's it's crazy. If anybody can negotiate that up, it's Mike Oresko. So I'm like all in on that.
I think it's fun to ride on Mike Oresko and give him a hard time about a lot of things.
But he gets shit done.
He is a very smart media player. His background, for those who don't know, is CBS Sports, I want to say. He was an executive there. I know he was a TV executive before he was named commissioner of the Big East, which immediately became the American.
The Big East.
Once upon a time. He's brought in to negotiate media contracts. So that's really, if there's one thing he can do well, it's negotiate a deal and see kind of the future of the media landscape. And I think that is important to remember. I think there's a lot of AAC teams, though, that are going to be considering their own future in this. I think a team
they should.
you know, like a team like ECU doesn't have anywhere else where they can land, unfortunately for them right now. It's just not available. So you need to make the best of the situation. But a team like Navy could very easily consider independence again if this isn't what they want, though their athletic director, Gladchuk, was on the committee that like looked up the six, or that kind of came up with these six names, along with SMU, USF, Memphis, and Navy's ADs were all in charge of this kind of search committee. So
you know what's funny is the Navy contact for the media sent out an email, I guess this morning, and it was the Yahoo email about the AAC is close to six school expansion. he literally just sent the link to the article to the media, and that was it. Like no context, nothing else. It's just like sources. The AAC is close to massive six school expansion. Sources, and I was like, that's,
I mean,
that, I was like, that's interesting.
That article like, literally is where like it says like the name Chuck Gladchuk's one of the names who, or one of the ADs who came up with this list of schools. So it's just,
I just don't believe anything. I know, I loved your
thing is this is plan C. This is,
yeah,
you know, plan A was,
I just don't believe any of it.
It was to not lose any teams to the Big 12 and possibly like if the Big 12 folds on itself to grab a couple of teams that are like loose. Plan B was to raid the Mountain West, and when
they were like, nope,
well,
no thanks.
Get into the reasons, it was, they're varied, but it didn't work,
you know? It didn't,
and now it was like raid CUSA, and it seems like it's gonna work, but we don't know yet that it
we just worked. Don't know, that's the thing, so yeah. We'll see.
So
it's a wait and see. That's exactly what we've been saying this whole time. It's like, it's interesting to talk about this and be prepared, and that's why your article is so great, but at the end of the day, until there's paperwork signed, I can't get behind any of it. I can't.
I know you're not a big realignment person. I hate it. I love the realignment talk.
I know you're really good at it. You like take all these little angles that I would have never even thought of. Like,
okay. I love it. It's like fan fiction. I love it.
It is like fan fiction.
You can build your own little conference in your head. I've got a whole UMass conference in my head where it goes like this, right? UMass, UConn come together. Temple says, oh, we kind of want out of this thing. We don't geographically fit and emphasize basketball. All right, they're coming over too. That's, Old Dominion and Marshall, they need a new home. We're up to five right there.
Buffalo
says, ooh, I like that. That's a little less travel for us. They're over Western Kentucky. Come on down. Then I'll see Madison maybe. You know, maybe grab a couple of the New England schools, like maybe New Hampshire wants to take the step
up. Ooh, New Hampshire.
And you've got a nice little 8-9 team conference right there. And I'm a big fan of that.
See, they should have a contest. Again, you know how like radio stations have contests to like be a DJ or like whatever? They should have like a conference realignment contest where fans come up with the best plans and submit them. And then the best one wins and they make it.
Hawaii, Boston College, two team conference.
God, no. See, then you would quickly get it shut down by just doing that, by submitting that. So
you can do like a four corners thing, like a Hawaii, Washington, Miami, BC, maybe Arizona State.
This is terrible.
I regret
it already.
Beautiful. All right.
Anyways, go check out the article. It's great on Underdog Dynasty. But
yes, thank you. Yeah. Absolutely. We do have three games to go over and review. Not that many games this past week. So it's, you know, going to be not too long.
We had short little podcast episode for you guys.
Exactly. Yes. So the first game is last Thursday, which feels like a month ago now. Navy so 17, Memphis 35. For a brief quarter or so, I really thought Navy was back. They had an 11 minute touchdown drive, which was just
unreal.
Chef's kiss.
Unreal. Beautiful. And then the counter with the 69 yard one play.
The Calvin Austin like reverse.
Epic. It was epic. So like, what game are you going to see the longest touchdown drive of the season in all of college football and then the shortest? That's back incredible. I mean, you can't script that. You just can't.
It was actually hysterical.
It was a great game.
It was a lot of fun. And I do think Navy is showing so much in-season improvement, but Memphis was just way too talented on offense for them to keep up. Yeah. And that's unfortunate because I picked Navy. So,
yes, I was just going to say, I got this one right.
My thought process was that, you know, Memphis's rushing defense.
That Navy was back, but they're not back.
So. It's not that Navy was back. It was more Memphis has had a lot of trouble in their rushing defense.
Yeah.
You know, like UTSA really ground them down with that. Tulsa did a really good job grinding them down with that. You know, the momentum was completely against Memphis. A little momentum building for Navy, you know, I figured it would work. And again, like I said, when it was 7-7, Navy just had an 11 minute touchdown drive. I was pretty confident with that still, but
yeah, Dan was texting me, like basically taunting me. And I was like, you shouldn't do that. Don't do it.
You know, everything, if you look at the stat book, everything worked out except for how explosive Memphis was. And then once Navy's down in a game, like by two scores,
they can't come back.
They're done. They're usually done at that point, just because they're not designed to. Navy dropped back for like 12 passes and got sacked 4 times. Like, that's not okay. But it's also,
Memphis was hungry. Like, Memphis's defense came. They wanted to prove
something.
Eat.
They wanted to prove something because they've been getting a lot of, you know, flack for how they played against Temple and how they played against Tulsa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
rightfully
it was a rough month or so stretch for Memphis, and they deserve to take some, you know, to take some of that on the chin. But it was good to see them bounce back, definitely. And I think I'm ready to announce that Calvin Austin's the best wide receiver in the conference. I think I'm ready
God. What a great moment on the podcast just now, Dan. I'm so happy for you.
I can stop here. Stop telling myself Reggie Roberson's better. I think it's Calvin Austin.
It's time. It's time. I was just really happy that, because you're talking about how to, it's the rush defense. It's hard to stop it. But in my mind, I was like, all you have to do is load the box with the, just everybody on your roster. And because, you know, they're going to run it one of three ways. And then if you force him to throw, he's just not that good at it.
No.
Sometimes he'll get it, but you give up those tosses. Yeah. You know, well, that's okay. What
Navy tries to do to keep you from overloading the box like that, is to have the occasional, like, basically maybe a wheel route or someone in the seam. And no, you're right. They're not consistent enough. That's why they got sacked 4 times on 12 dropbacks. They're not like nothing about their offense is designed to do that.
Just bring it every time. And then you give up what you give up and you make up for it. You know, it's whatever.
That's the chaos theory of defense, which is one I personally subscribe to. Yeah. I don't. Like, you know, again, to talk about Notre Dame more than anyone wants to hear. A lot of Notre Dame fans were very upset with Marcus Freeman when he first came in, because Marcus Freeman's a chaos, like, theory defensive guy in a lot of respects. He's, I want to sack the other opposing quarterback. I want to force tackles for loss. I want to create turnovers. And if I give up a 60-yard play here and there, well, so be it. Notre Dame fans weren't used to that. They were used to Clark Lee, who was very much a bend but don't break. We're going to, you know, make you earn it the whole way down the field. And it's just, it's a different style. I think they're both very great defensive minds. It's not to say one's better than the other, but it takes some adjusting to. And yeah, you probably don't want to let Navy throw the ball for 200 yards against you on accident. But at the same time,
I don't think they will. I don't think that's a concern you ever have to worry. Like, they'll try, you know, and they may get a few off. But
I think with Lavate at quarterback, they're a lot more likely to, because our line, again, I'll still say I think very highly of our line. I think he just doesn't know the offense well enough yet. And Lavate does, and that's the way you go from here. I think there's no debate about that at this point. I think Arline's a great athlete, and he has a ton of potential to fill different roles in that offense, but he doesn't read the defense well enough. He doesn't make decisions quick enough yet.
Right.
He also had no ability to throw the football whatsoever. He was like 1 for 20 in his like career or something like that. He was
not great.
Didn't happen. Lavate's not, again, still a Navy quarterback, but a little bit more consistent. But no, I think this game was really about Memphis showing that they do have that ability to still be explosive on offense and to, you know, bow up a little bit on defense where they hadn't in the past.
Yeah. I meant to text Mike McIntyre and say congrats, because that was, I thought it was impressive, especially given however much everyone's been hating on the defense. But
you know what's wild is Hennigan only threw the ball 12 times in this game.
That is wild. Because the scores came in such weird ways, you know,
there's
it wasn't
so much
like traditional
play from them. But yeah, 8 for 12 for 215, 2 touchdowns and interception for Seth Hennigan. A weird, weird day.
Really weird.
Yeah. You know. And then, you know,
it was, I'm happy to see Memphis. You know, of course we want to see Navy do well because it's Navy, but I'm glad Memphis figured it out. So, and I'm glad to take the W on that.
Absolutely. Memphis deserves a lot of credit for figuring it out, because they were in a spiral. They lost this game to Navy. They might never win again. But, you know, they're in a better spot now, I think.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the game that I would rather not talk about next?
UCF 21. Yeah, let's, yeah, so 56. We could, Well, so then we can end with a happy note.
I think we can end with a much more interesting game, if we're being honest.
Yes.
UCF 21, Cincinnati 56. Yeah, it wasn't that close. if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that close. Mm-hmm. I thought that Mikey Keen was overwhelmed from the word go. I thought that UCF was going, I didn't think UCF was going to win this game. I want that, go back, check the record. I said Cincinnati.
Right. We both picked Cincinnati, but you thought it was going to be a game. I was going
to
be closer
because I thought that UCF was going to be able to, Cincinnati's rush defense is like in the 50s on the season, around mm-hmm. there. So it's good. It's not great by any means. I thought UCF, especially once Isaiah Bowser was announced to be playing again and healthy, that they were going to get some of their own on the ground and at least control the clock and, you know, do a little bit better. I thought that the UCF defense was going to get a couple stops in the first half. Those are things that just didn't happen.
no.
I think it became very clear that Mikey Keene couldn't throw into the secondary at all, and certainly not downfield in the first half. They weren't even really letting him try, which, fine, I get it. You're trying to keep it safe throws to get the ball into athletes' hands quickly. Uh-huh. But Cincinnati just locked up the outside and loaded the box, and there was nothing UCF could do on offense for most of the game. I'll say this. Keen flash potential. He's got potential there. He's just so clearly a freshman out there at Nippert Stadium. He was just not, I mean, Cincinnati's got like 3 or 4 NFL starters on their defense right now. It just, it wasn't a fair fight for a freshman quarterback. It wasn't, you know, and no. Then your boy, your buddy, Jerome Ford.
Yes. Jerome Ford.
He exploded again for, you know, he torched the UCF defense.
He did. He got Offensive Player of the Week for the AAC, set a career high for the second consecutive week, mm-hmm. 189 yards, 4 touchdowns. Who has business scoring 4 touchdowns?
Those, I think, were all in the first half, too.
Insane. Yeah, all first half touchdowns, all of them.
Yeah, I watched it.
I thought maybe we got, I thought he had one maybe in the late, but the craziest thing is that he averaged 9.5 yards per carry. He hit a career high 20 attempts, but his touchdown runs were 1 yard, 2 yard, 79 yards, and then 4 yards. Like, weirdest mix. He's just so versatile.
Yeah, he is a very good running back, and he's a great balance to what Ritter can do a little bit further outside with on keepers and on, you know, I still don't think Cincinnati is a great offense, but it's a very difficult offense to stop with any consistency. You know, it does a lot of things very well. It's an elite defense, though. That's a top 3 or 4 defense in the country, you know, regardless of, you know, conference or anything. That's really what the strength is. They kept on the broadcast. They kept talking about Desmond Ritter. He's a huge, like, you know, Ritter deserves credit. I'm not trying to take credit away from
him. Of course.
But they're talking like Ritter, the Heisman candidate. And first off, I was thinking, but not really. Like, if you're with him, and he's not even the best player in his own offense. Ford's better.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. But
the Heisman's a quarterback award, but there's like 5 players in Cincinnati that are more important to the Bearcats than him.
Agreed.
The nicest way possible.
I don't think it's crazy for him to be in the conversation, given that there's not a lot of talent that's been overly impressive. Do you know what I mean? Like, we started the season like Spencer Rattler was a contender. Like, no, that's clearly
now.
Right.
So Matt like, Corral, but Matt Corral will lay a dud of a game every now and again.
Yeah, and I can't stand if he wins the Heisman, I will quit. I will literally quit if he wins the Heisman.
I think
Desmond Ritter is a good guy.
And yes, I think there's a really easy answer to all this that we're overlooking. It's Grayson McCall should win the Heisman.
Oh my God. I say Holton Ahlers.
No. I'm going to stop recording this now.
Let me just say this about Ritter. He's the winningest active quarterback in college football, 36-5, which insane. Is, or I guess now it's 37-5. It's pretty impressive.
No, and it's a complete role reversal from 2018 when he was a freshman and went to the bounce house and was overwhelmed by the bounce house himself and just he couldn't handle that environment. And he got lit up a couple times in that game, and, you know, UCF blew Cincy out in that game. It's a complete role reversal. And if, you know, UCF can get Gus Malzahn to stay and can develop up instead of losing, you know, their coaching staff every 2-3 years, I think that they can get back to where they were then and be in the same spot. I think it just takes time and, you know, a little bit more consistency. I think a lot of UCF fans are going to hit the panic button because 3-3 is 3-3 halfway through the year. But
it's a rebuilding year, man. It's a new coach, injury plagued.
It's a completely new system. There's a lot of reasons for it. And frankly, this season, and I forget the receiver did, it's not worth bringing up their name because it would only lead to, you know, being like I'm going after him. But if the ball doesn't bounce upwards off of UCF receiver's arms into the air for a pick six, Dylan Gabriel doesn't break his collarbone against Louisville. Yeah. Then Dylan Gabriel doesn't break his collarbone on one of those like weird, stupid pitch plays, which means he plays against Navy, which frankly means they beat Navy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this is their first loss of the year. And it's probably a much closer game because you've got a quarterback.
This is that fan fiction you were talking about.
Exactly. I love it. But again, my point is this is how close seasons are to being completely different for teams.
Of course.
And 3-3.
How you weather the storm is what's going to make you the team you are. So how you get through this and rebuild is going to make UCF's identity. So.
You know, UCF would have beaten Navy if Brandon Johnson doesn't fumble the ball in the fourth quarter.
Oh my God. But, okay. We're going to move back to Cincinnati because they won this game. They won at home. And this is now their 24th home game winning streak, which they're still second most in the country behind Clemson, but they're closing in. Clemson has 31. And they're closing in on that streak. So
Clemson's going to lose at home at some point this year.
They are, for sure.
Their offense is so bad. They should have lost already. But
my question to you is this little side Clemson note. Do you think there was talks about Dabo Swinney for the LSU job?
No.
Do you think he would ever jump ship?
To Alabama, yes. Not to LSU.
Not to LSU. I could. No. I weirdly could see it happening. Just because
I think
it would be just chaos. Like, why not?
So here's why you don't do that if your dad was Sweeney. Right. First off, Clemson will pay you any number you ask them to. Mm-hmm. So it's not a money thing. And second off, in the ACC in a normal year where your offense isn't anemic, you walk to the playoff every single year. You walk to it. If you're at LSU, you have to play Bama every year. You probably have to play Georgia or Florida in the SEC championship game, if you get that far. Auburn will have years where they're great. You know, people claim Texas A&M's good every year. I don't know about that. You know, it's hard to deny whether you like Lane Kiffin or not that Ole Miss is a challenge now. They're maybe not a real threat for the SEC championship, but they're certainly a threat to beat you in any individual game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot to be concerned about. Don't get me wrong, LSU is a great program, great thing. I can't wait for Luke Fickell to be their coach next year.
Oh my God. Cincinnati fans are going to hate us. I just want to end this game recap by saying congratulations to Cincinnati, number two team in the nation. We're proud of you.
And they're legitimately the number two team in the country. Yeah. Luke Fickell said they don't know what style points are, but they're going to be styling on the rest of the conference all season.
It's insane. I don't know at this point.
I'm going to say there's a reason Desmond Ridder was in the fourth quarter of this game. It's because they wanted more points.
It's insane to me that they did what the committee asked. They climbed all the way up
into the top spot.
Yeah. And if you win out, how do you not give them a playoff spot? Right. Okay.
So right now, here's how they don't get a playoff spot. Georgia wins out, basically. Oklahoma wins out. Ohio State wins out. And Oregon wins out. That's it.
I think Michigan's beating Ohio State this year. This is the year. Mark my words, everybody.
Okay.
I was at Big Ten Media Day and Jim Harbaugh said to us he was going to beat Ohio State this year or die trying. So we're either going to see a Michigan victory or we're going to see a bunch of graves. But either way, I'm here for it.
Here's what I'll say about that is I don't like Ohio State or Michigan. Again, everyone knows the Notre Dame thing. Cannot stand Michigan. Right. I've got one of my best friends since forever, who's currently gains doctorate at Ohio State. So I'm going to go with the old OHIO on that. Just no good reason for it other than that. Also, they're the better team, better coach team.
I'm going to Michigan this weekend for the Northwestern game. So I will.
Michigan should win that game. Yeah, Michigan.
Yeah, duh. Game. But I'm going to check in on Harbaugh and see how we're looking for this Ohio State deal.
Depends on whether or not Clifford's healthy, but I think Penn State could beat Michigan. I think Michigan State could beat Michigan. They're going to be 9-3 again, like usual.
Oh my God. All right. I regret bringing this up. Right. I want to give hold on. One more honor for Cincinnati. Yes.
Oh,
Kobe Bryant.
They all got him. Oh,
he got a bunch, but actually it's crazy. Yeah, he did. So scored a touchdown on a 74-yard interception run to lead the defense that limited UCF to a season low 296 yards and 141 passing yards in the win. So
I'm going to say something real quick about that to build up. I'm shocked UCF had that many yards in this game because at one point in the first half, they had 10 yards. And it was a quarter and a half into this game. They're averaging half
than I thought. Yeah.
I think towards the end of the game, they opened it up a little bit more and were a little bit more okay with Keane maybe throwing into mistakes. And
they're like, F it.
Well, because the first half, I didn't hate the gameplay in the first half of, well, we do like quick slants and screens to get the ball into it. Because UCF has great athletes at wide receiver, even if they're not the, you know, most refined right now. And even if Jalen Robinson's injured, they still have great athletes. So try to get it to athletes in space. But I mean, the corners for Cincinnati are NFL corners, Bryant and Gardner. So like, it just, they couldn't do it successfully. And, you know, that was the way of keeping teams from having to read that defense and try to like hold on to it too long. They let him open it up a little bit in the second half. He gained a little bit more. Again, it was inconsistent because the pick six was the most telegraphed pick six I've seen in a long time. It was it was like a slow developing wide receiver screen from the far hash. And I swear to God, it was so
well,
obvious.
At least Kobe Bryant,
on my couch, I saw the pick six before he threw the ball.
Shout out to Kobe Bryant. And we forgot to mention Xavier Collins from Memphis. He was also on the honor roll, game high 12 tackles. So shout out Zay for that.
You're in charge of all the honor roll stuff. So
I know. I forgot the Memphis guy. The rest of it's all Tulsa and South Florida. So let's go.
Tulsa, South Florida was definitely the best game of the weekend for the American, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. I think it was so interesting. Oh,
wait, I gotta give the score. Tulsa 32, USF 31.
Yes, 1 point game. We said South Florida.
Joked. Which again,
we picked South Florida, both of us, by the way.
I thought USF was going to win. I'll admit that.
I really thought they were too, but I'm so happy to see them fight like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job in all phases of the game. They had 14 points off of a kick return and a, was it pick six? Yes. And then they had another seven off a very short field on it. It was either an interception that led to the short field or a fumble recovery that led to like a 15-yard field.
A fumble recovery on the kickoff.
No, I thought that USF
fumble was a different. Kickoff. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I'll jump up right now with my notes. No, but USF 21 points that they had were either off directly off special teams, a turnover, or a short field off a turnover. And I want to say this now because I do want to talk about how hard the USF players fought because they deserve that credit. Jeff Scott's the reason they lost this game. At the end of the game, he took the ball out of Timmy McLean's hands on a really poorly managed clock situation where they let 30 seconds drain off the clock, wasted a timeout after that point, and they took it out of his hands on third and one and then fourth and one, both times back to back with direct snaps to the running back that just Jackson player for Tulsa just was waiting for it. And it was, I thought, pretty obvious play calling what they were doing because they had done it a little bit earlier in the game and they wasted time. And I think that's a large, large part of why they lost the game is they got very predictable and too conservative and used the clock in a, I think, less than cohesive way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part of what happened to them is the coaching staff. You know, USF has a lot of young players that need to learn how to do a lot of things, but this coaching staff is still learning how to coach in games. And I think it shows in games like this that they absolutely should have won. But the players, I want to go back, played really hard and with a lot of energy and effort that you don't normally see from a team in their position at this point in the season. And I think the USF, like Battier, McLean, these are really talented young guys who can develop into something special, but
the freshman running back, Brian Batty, who you just talked about, he was the special teams player of the week.
Yeah, he had the kick return.
Exactly. He became the ninth American Conference player in league history, which I did not know, to register a 100-yard kickoff return in the game.
Not that old a league either.
I know, but that's still impressive to be one of just nine. He's averaging 28.6 yards per return this season, which ranks second in the American. So shout out to him for getting special teams player of the week.
Yeah. And I think that the Jeff Scott kind of coaching staff is doing a lot of stuff well there. They're getting players to play very hard and it's clear that there's buy-in. It's obviously a major youth movement. They've finally gotten the funding for an indoor practice facility. There's a lot of stuff going on with that. That's going well. But last year, I think, I don't remember if I talked about with you or with Joe when he was the co-host of the show, when we were talking about USF before the season, I said, Jeff Scott, just as much as anyone else, and made clear rookie coach mistakes where he like rookie head coach clock management errors in 2020. There's a lot of them actually. And I'm still seeing him making those same errors in 2021. And that to me is concerning that he hasn't grown in how he manages the clock or how he calls games. He does a lot of other things well, but that's a concern.
Okay. That makes sense. I will say that it's impressive. They had 535 total yards of offense.
Yeah. Are you sure you're not looking at Tulsa there?
Wait, am I? Oh yeah, I am. Sorry. Yeah. I'm saying, yeah, you're right. 535 yards of offense for Tulsa is impressive when you beat a team by 1 point.
The box score is so weird to this game, but again,
it's weird.
If you look at the turnovers, that's a huge factor. And it is one of those turnovers went for a score. The other, like I said, set up like a 15-yard field. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Plus the kickoff return. It's all, it skews stats like that.
Really does.
Man, USF was 0-for-3 on fourth down in this game. That's, I am so familiar for it on fourth down. Especially like once you're past like your own 45, anything fourth and two or shorter, I say go for it. You know what I mean? Like obviously there's like situational stuff that you need to be aware of where it's like, hey, you know, it's fourth and two from our own 30 and we've got a good kicker and we need to tie this game. You probably tie the game, you know?
Yeah.
I get it. But like, I think coaches need to go for it more than they do on the whole. This is becoming less of a thing I complain about in college and more in the NFL now.
Yeah.
And I say this after Josh Allen couldn't get half an inch on fourth and, you know, one last night on Monday Night Football, but you know, who cares about that? They're the Bills. I'm a Patriots fan. I was happy to see it happen. But you know what I mean? So like, I like that aggressiveness, but like I just mentioned, like I thought the play calling on the one towards the end of the game was abysmal and predictable. Man, 31 first downs for Tulsa, 13 for USF. I knew watching the game that it was pretty lopsided. That's so much more lopsided than it felt though. Just again, because USF had the lead for most of this game, it doesn't feel like Tulsa dominated statistically or should have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know.
One of the weirdest box scores I've seen in a very long time.
It is.
You know,
you have to hand it to Tulsa's defense, led by Justin Wright, linebacker, who was the defensive player of the week for the American, team high 7 tackles. 2.5 sacks, and his final sack was on that USF's final possession after the Golden Hurricane took its first lead. So that was a very key moment for him to come up big. So well done by the junior linebacker there, Justin Wright. There's a slew of others. I mean, they had two guys got honor roll. Shamari Brooks, obviously, for the game-winning touchdown. Yeah, he was incredible. 145 yards and that touchdown on 23 carries. And then the junior running back, Deneric Prince, rushed for 110 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
So they all got honors. So
Tulsa's a good running team when they really put their mind to it. That's probably the strength of their offense, because Davis Brent, I think, is a very limited quarterback in terms of what he can do. You know what I mean? That's not a super knock on him. It's just a little reality to that.
It is what it is.
Again, though, I didn't think that they let Timmy McLean go and try to win the game. I thought they were just still too conservative with him. And that's the thing that...
Well, they're like you. They didn't believe in him enough.
Well, no. Going back to when I said to play Cade Fortin at the start of the year, that's because they had done all these things. Like, Cade Fortin's the guy. He's the guy. Then it was like the second drive of the game. They're like, yeah, what if we tried the other guy out? And I was just like... You have to pick one and go for it. It's been over a month now that they've had Timmy McLean picked as the guy. And now, like, listen, it's not getting any worse at USF this year. Like, you're not going to a bowl game. Let him go open it up and see what he can really do, and let him learn by making mistakes. Like I just said about Mike Eakin and UCF against Cincinnati. Like, when you're super conservative with him, and that's something I thought would probably be a good idea against Cincinnati, it wasn't working. When you let him open up, and even though he made mistakes throwing downfield, he also made things happen more. You know what I mean? So go let them learn what the offense should look like next year. You know what I mean? Go let a young player like that go play. Like, I mean, Seth Hennigan makes mistakes at Memphis, but he also makes a lot of great plays as a freshman. I think that that's because they let him go downfield with the ball, whereas McLean was really not allowed to. And he took some shots downfield, obviously. I'm not trying to say everything was 2 yards downfield, but it just feels like they don't have the full trust to let him just go out and run the offense right now.
Yeah. Well, it's onward and upward for USF. They're doing exactly what we wanted to see from them, which is make strides moving forward and do better than they did the week before. Yeah. So yes, it's a heartbreaking loss and you hate to see that fortitude go out the window at the very end of the game, but it's better than what we've seen and it's trending up. So,
Exactly. It's like I've said before, it's, you have to watch the, like actually watch the USF games, actually like see the foundation that's being built. That's what's more important than the wins loss. Or like, I know we're just talking about the box score being funky, but it's funky. So what, look at the actual game itself and see how you got there. And
you get a good feeling from seeing those guys fight. I think, so
yeah, there's definitely a lot of effort there that you like to see. Tulsa, I thought, you know, I didn't think they were going to win the game. So I thought that it was good to see that they actually fought back, because that's an easy time to just be like,
roll over.
Exactly. Just be like, I guess we lost. You know what I mean? It is. I know it sounds silly, but like, it's easy to let that be your mentality once you go down two scores on the road, even if it's an, you know, I'm going to say an empty stadium. You know, I mean, it was, the crowd was not good at Ray J. And that's a whole other debate and topic of conversation that over at the Daily Stampede, the SB Nation USF poll site, they've done a lot of work over the years talking about how bad USF markets their athletics and how poor attendance has been, even when USF is good. And they announced something like 21,000 people were at that game. I don't know if 2,000 were at that game. It was that bad, the attendance on Saturday. And I get And I get it. They're bad. It's hot in Florida on a Saturday afternoon. I get it.
But maybe if you have that crowd, then that game goes differently.
Exactly.
You know?
There's, you know, you don't have
crazy.
It's not a great environment right now. Yeah. And I get it from the fans who'd be like, why would I go pay money to watch a team lose? But it's supposed to be a community
they could have
that
won.
You're a part of. It's supposed to be a community that you're a part of and excited to be about, you know, no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to pay money to watch UConn versus UMass a couple weeks ago. Let me tell you
that. That's
true. I wasn't thrilled that I had to pay money to go see it, but but it's honestly like, even if you're bad, there's something fun to being a part of the community still.
And you're supporting the guys on the field who have to be there no matter what. So.
Yeah. But definitely, like I said, check out the Daily Stampede stuff about like what they've talked about. Yeah. And it goes back years, them talking about this type of stuff, but it's definitely worth checking out.
For sure.
I was 1-2 this week.
First
losing record on the year for a week. It's only three games, so does it really count? I don't think
it does.
So.
My 2-1 counts. So.
All right. Yeah, it's fair. That puts me at 45-17 on the season. You're 33-29. We're about halfway through the year, so there's plenty of time to catch up with that, you know?
I'm hanging in there, not going negative yet. So we'll see.
Hey, you've got a four. If you, I don't know how many games we haven't looked at next week's schedule too closely.
Haven't
yet.
Really yet.
I mean,
I know Tulane's playing, so I'm probably screwed.
Well, it's the space game. It's the Memphis UCF space game, as I know that much. Wait, is it? It is, right?
I'm not
jumping a week.
No, I think I'm pretty sure that's right. Because we talked about it on the last episode, all of the uniforms.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah.
Okay, because I just in the back of my head remembered seeing that the UCF Temple game on the 30th is noon. I was like, wait a minute, that's not this week, is it? So I'm
terrible.
So yeah, there is going to be the UCF Memphis space game. I'm really excited for that game. It's at the Bounce House, space uniforms.
Yeah.
You know, Memphis UCF has in recent years, no matter where the teams have been, it's usually towards the top of the conference, been an incredibly fun game.
Good.
I think that's definitely one to look for. I mean, I haven't looked at the schedule closely.
Thursday night's the Tulane SMU game. So
you better not pick Tulane.
Oh, I might.
Why would you?
I might do it. I don't know.
And when Tulane's defense gives up 50 points, what are you going to do? Because Tulane's defense is bad.
But watch, like, I'll pick SMU and then Tulane does upset SMU.
I think that'd be funny. I think that'd be very funny.
Oh, we'll see. You guys will have to listen to the next podcast to find out.
Yes, and we will have to figure out who's playing next week.
Yes, we'll get on that right now.
All right. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96. I remembered my last name.
Good job.
It took me a
second. It's Tuesday.
It is.
Yeah, it's fine. You can find me at MLM, EMILNEM.
Awesome, and we're off.